I know that we can.
I know darn well.
And we can work it out.
And yes, we can. The way we can. Yes, we can. Or why can't we? If we want to, yes, we can.
I know we can make it work. I know we can make it if we try.
Oh, yes, we can. I know we can. Yes, we can.
Great gosh, you might.
Oh, yes, we can. I know we can.
For the future of the little bitty boys and girls, we got to
make this land a better land than the world in which we live.
And we gotta help each man be a better man with the kindness that we give.
I know we can make it.
I know that we can.
I know darn well
we can work it out.
Oh, yes, we can. I know we can. Yes, we can. Or why can't we? If we want it, yes, we can.
I know we can make it work. I know that we can make it if we try.
Yes, we can. I know we can. Yes, we can.
Great gosh, you're mighty.
Yes, we can. I know we can.
A big hit in its day with a message that we need right now. The Grammy Award-winning Pointer Sisters, Ruth, Anita, Bonnie, and June with Yes, We Can. By the way, you think Barack Obama might have gotten a hint about the Yes, We Can from the Pointer Sisters? I don't know. This is from their 1973 Blue Thumb album, The Pointer Sisters. June died of cancer in 2006, but the Pointer Sisters continue as they always have. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it's Free Your Mind Friday. Yesterday, the station had to do some dramatic and radical electrical engineering. The entire building was down, but you know, there are geniuses at work at PRN, and they got everything fixed, everything overhauled, and so we're back with each other again. Isn't that great? Well, so much to talk about. So much happened this week, and this is the time to free your mind about it. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. Let's see who is talking with us today. Harvey from Berkeley, you're on the air.
Hello, wonderful Eutrice.
Hey, wonderful Harvey. What's going on?
Well, I just want to say bless you and your vast progressive radio network audience. And
Thank you.
And fighting the good fight, I'd like to talk about the up-and-coming Congressional Balanced Budget Amendment. And there's a fast-moving proposal in Congress that would throw our entire system of government out of balance and force deep cuts in programs like Social Security and Medicare. Last year, Congress dramatically increased the budget deficit with massive tax breaks for corporations and wealthy individuals. Now the Republicans are pushing a constitutional amendment that'll force enormous spending cuts to make up for their bloated budget deficit. And we need to stop this so-called balanced budget amendment, which would hurt working families by reducing Social Security payments, Medicare, and other essential programs that a lot of American men, women, and children, especially the elderly, rely on. It would let Congress pass the buck on one of its fundamental responsibilities by putting judges instead of our elected representatives in charge of budgetary decisions. It would also force spending cuts whenever our economy is in decline, making every recession slump deeper and last longer. Lawmakers could vote on the balanced budget amendment as early as next week. So we need to speak up and call or email our congressional representatives and tell them to vote no on inserting the balanced budget amendment into our Constitution. I say we have the power. Let's use it or we'll lose it. Just say no to the balanced budget amendment.
Well, thank you. One of the things, though, is you'd think by now we would learn a lesson about this progression to authoritarianism and to creating unequal societies. You'd think we'd have enough indication by now that this is not the right way to go. But the Trump administration seems to be oblivious, intentionally oblivious. But I suspect his own constituency will teach him a lesson with these crazy moves that his administration is making. But thank you for starting us off today.
Thank you.
Oh, by the way, let me ask you, how did the earthquake in your neck of the woods affect you in your area? Oh, are you there? Oh, he's gone. Desiree from New York, you're on the air.
Hi, Utrecht. How are you?
Hello.
I would like to say thank you so much for all of the work that you do and your leadership every day on PRN. I also want to say to dear Willie and E from Edgewater, I heard your messages and I listen every day. Time does go by very fast, and I've endured some experiences and have been on a long path, and I'm coming to find my sunshine on a farm. Circumstances have pushed me to relocate from New York, and I've decided why not pursue my goal in homesteading, learning and educating myself to then bring back that education to communities that I've come from. I came from a low-income community. I come from an urban community. So those have been my goals, and much of what resonated with me on Thursday with Martin Luther's speech was discouragement. And I have felt discouragement, but the discouragement, I found something sort of a voice in myself to say I could be discouraged and I could decide not to eat. I could decide to self-wallow, or I could make a choice to go and shoot for something that I feel a sense that's my calling. So I wanted to say that, and thank you so much. I continue to listen, and have a wonderful Friday.
So thank you. I wanted to know, how did you decide that this is the direction that you're going to go in?
I suffer with a lot of self-doubt, and that may not be surprising to anyone. I'm sure we all do. And I made choices that were for an external, something outside of myself. And I came to realize, though, that choice to go forth and seek out this education was moving for an external force, but it was really more for me. So I'll always thank that person for that. But I hear your show, and I hear many shows, and I'm caught in this web like we all are, and I want to find a way to be happy. I want to find a way to not only be happy for myself, but how can I bring that happiness to others who are still in the same boat? We're all struggling together, and you mentioned a lot of names on Thursday, and every one of those names was just a cog on a great moving machine. And there's much work that needs to be done, but we can all do that work. We can all do Martin's work. We can all do Garvey's work if each one of us takes a little page from each one. And I would like to hope that being able to educate others to find self-sustaining ways to not be so commercially driven, to seek out the necessities of life, which is property, which is to eat, which is to be happy, which is to educate. If I could do that and bring that to just one community, that would be great. I just want to say there was a community that I went to. I only spent 2 days there. It was a Camp Hill farm in Pennsylvania called Kimberton Hills. and it's an organic farm that works together with adults with learning disabilities. I was very shocked because this can be a kind of community that everyone can have everywhere in every state, and I think there should be more of them. And when I saw these people and worked with them, there's so many people who need it. And if I could somehow recreate that, maybe do a GoFundMe page, maybe just get a couple of acres, that's something that I want to do. That was a long question, and I want to give others a chance to chime in today, this writer. But I'll call again.
You know, it's funny. You never know how things would hit you. And when you were talking and you referenced Dr. King's speech, I'm glad that you saw that even a great person, right? Everybody is great in one way or the other, but here's a really outstanding person grappling with exactly what it is you just talked about, self-doubt. And whether he was up to the task, whether, you know, he would make it. But that just goes to show that we are all experiencing at one time or another the exact same feeling. Thank you so much for calling in today.
Thank you.
Jay from New York, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Louise.
How are you?
I'm good. Listen, Louise, I just basically wanted to call to give praise and love to Sister Winnie Mandela. You know, Winnie Mandela to me is a hero. She was a freedom fighter, a mother of the revolution that went on in South Africa and that's still going on. You know, just the essence of African womanhood. A woman who stood tall, went through all sorts of degradation, brutality, and still stood for the liberation of African people. She never bent nor bowed to the oppressor. I mean, words just can't really describe the love that I have for her and the manner in which she tried to elevate our people to a point of freedom. And to look and see the oppressor for who he really was and to never give up. So whenever I hear somebody talk about Winnie in a disparaging way, I ask them to look themselves in the mirror and ask, would you be able to have done what she done in those conditions, in those times? So may Winnie Mandela live forever in our hearts and in our minds. And may we always remember her for who and what she was and what she sacrificed. Because there will only be few like her to ever walk this earth. And until we realize the greatness of that sister, we will never truly be free in our minds or in our spirits.
So I ask you, as I've asked others, that's a very wonderful praise that you just offered. When we are evaluating somebody, as you have, you are no doubt aware that there were negative points against her. How did you, in fact, did you deal with these? And nonetheless, you saw the heroism, and you saw more of the heroism than the bad parts or the bad points. How did you reconcile that?
I have no problems but the negative. I don't care about the negative. I understand and I appreciate the positive. If she had to put burning neckties on individuals, she had to do what she had to do to liberate our people. Liberation of our people will never happen without bloodshed. So maybe she was about the business of doing that. Maybe some people got caught up in it who shouldn't have. But that's just part of war. So I'm never going to look at the negative of what they claim her to have done to take away from my love of her. Because whatever she did it for the love and the liberation of African people. And that's the reality. That's the problem that we have as a people. That we don't want to do the unnecessary things to free ourselves. So that's why we're still enslaved today. That's why we're still under these conditions. Because we don't want to do one thing. We don't want to die. Until you could get to that point to accept your death and that you have to kill to free your babies, then you're just doing whatever you're doing to live. For what? To be a slave. So, no, I love Whitney. I'm happy about whatever decision she's made because in her heart she just wanted one thing, the liberation of African people. And that's what's most important to me in this life. All the other stuff don't mean anything. So if I have to die, I have no problems with it because I understand what life is and the reason why I'm living, what I've gained in this life and what I've seen in this life. And for all of those things, I've come to the conclusion that sometimes you have to die. And that's what William was about. She was about making our people better. And those that have issues with what she did negative, look at the world. Look at the world and accept her for who and what she did. And what she did, most importantly, was love African people. And not want us to be oppressed.
Well, I had to ask. Thank you for your call today and your contribution. The thing is that whenever we evaluate a person, a historic figure, and I'm glad that you were able to do that, you look at all the things. You're clear about what is the most important thing, but you don't negate the reality that this was a human being with many sides to her in an environment where all kinds of decisions were being made because this was war. This was a war. And I find it a little troubling that people just don't understand that when you look at a situation, you look at a person in a situation, you always have to take into account how that person chose to deal with it, whether you would do it or not. But of course, you're not. We've never been a part of a war, so we don't appreciate sometimes the stark realities that confront people who have to deal with it every day. We look at a child in Syria. And we think a six-year-old child. That child's experience makes him 60 years old. So he's not a chronological six-year-old child. These are the things that we also have to ponder, especially from a historical point of view. We do not deny what has happened, but we see it in its appropriate light. Thank you so much, Jay, for your call today. Julie from New York, you're on the air.
Hello, Yatrice, and to the PRN family.
Thank you.
I'd like to return to Wednesday's discussion about Martin Luther King and the 50-year anniversary of his assassination. I've been continuing to, as you say, trying to recalibrate my thinking and thinking about the instructions that he gave us about what is important in life. And on that day, I posted a picture that everyone probably saw on the New York Times or Wall Street Journal of the hotel with the Cadillac and the wreath and so forth. I had visited the museum. Well, I had visited Memphis on a 10-day Wheel of Justice journey 2 years ago. And I had heard about a protest that was there, but I hadn't given it much thought. And there was a lady there protesting outside the museum, and her signs about her protests were "Say no to downtown gentrification." And she says Dr. King came to Memphis to support the poor and the needy and the oppressed and not to buy worthless junk. So her goal is what was and is, I'm sure if she could, relocate the museum and establish the Lorraine Motel as a living testimony to his dream. So I ran into her before I actually went into the museum, and it did have an impact on me. And after speaking with her, she told me about the gentrification in the neighborhood, and she told me about an art gallery nearby where minority vendors were showing their work. And so I went over to see that, and there was also a little fair for children entrepreneurs that were starting their own business, and they were trying to get support in the neighborhood. And I met a little girl, and I posted her on Facebook. She was only 10 at the time, but her mother had died with cancer, and she wrote a prayer. And her minister was so impressed with the prayer that he was able to get her book published, and it's called Shiloh's Prayer. So I never went into that museum that day because on that day, it was my way of honoring Dr. King, because I thought she had a point there. And even when I go into museums, I try not to load up. I try just to come away with my impressions, and I take notes, and I'll have a map maybe, but not to buy stuff that I'm not that I'm not going to use later. And my mind actually drifted back to your commentary about the Black Panther, and I just kept thinking about all the money that was spent to see the film and to buy souvenirs. And what would Dr. King have thought about that? But my decision that day was to just not go into the museum. I learned about the community there and the people that were still there, and for this community that she wanted to sustain. I mean, that's her goal, to have the community sustained. So on that day, I didn't go in, and now I'm still struggling with that, because as you pointed out, we have to reevaluate and search for answers. So I have become now involved with the Poor People's Campaign. Being from North Carolina, I've gotten to know Reverend Barber, and I feel like that's a way of carrying forward something that he would have wanted. And he did give us the instructions, as you said. He instructed us about what was important, and so that is important, and that's why he went to Memphis to begin with. So that's what I'm doing now. So I'll hush.
Good for you. That's a very uplifting call, particularly as it has to do with your reorientation or recalibration. That's a fantastic aspect to your call today, and I thank you for sharing it. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Ma'at from New York, you're on the air.
Greetings to the beloved family. I'd like to make some brief comment on, I tell you, the callers are so dynamic, and I was glad to hear that I didn't miss anything yesterday as I was scrambling with different numbers or trying to hear the program. First of all, Harvey, he made an excellent point in terms of those, what do we call them, reprehensible, deplorable Republicans. Until this country deals with and gets some public way to finance the Koch brothers, the Koch brothers, the Mercer folks, Rebecca and Robert, we'll be going in the wrong directory as a freight train speed. The next caller, I didn't get her name. The sister, did you recall her name, Utrice?
Which one? Who said
about
what?
The land. Dealing with the land and her plans. But at any rate, that was so interesting, how she wound up leaving New York and what she's doing now in her journey I'm wondering too, because she made me think. I used to have a friend who has transitioned, but he was someone who was a student or a follower of Rudolf Steiner. And we need to look at what the Waldorf models of education and schools are. And he also had an agricultural program, which I think it even goes on up in New York State. And I think it's called biodynamics, but that sounds like someone who would have some information on that. Then Jay and the last caller, but Jay was talking about Winnie Mandela, and I saw a little clip on the NBC Nightly News, and in 2010, Winnie actually brought up the fact that what had happened, the agreement that her husband, her ex-husband had signed or agreed to, left black people out in terms of the economic wealth of the country. I forget exactly how she put it, but that was so crucial and so key and so relevant to our current world. And you notice that Ramaphosa. Yeah,
the current president
and the other one, Zuma. Those people are, if they're not billionaires, they're multi-hundreds in the millionaires. You know, he used to be part of the leader of the trade union, and now he's part of the on the capitalist end, and he's made tons of money. So that's an issue. And lastly, of course, Martin Luther King. It's just so crucial for us to deal with his principles and his great work to the beloved community. And a point that Jay had made about we're not willing to die. We're not willing, when we have a trickster, an operator in the community, there is no way to deal with it. So when we have some sort of conflict, we have no resolution. And one of the things that I came up with, because I am an idea person, is something along the lines of CERC. So it would be I'm blanking on it now, but Circle of Inquiry, Response, and Concern, so that you could go to your own community around a situation that needs to be resolved. And in fact, if anybody has any just one idea, because the next generation, the youth, needs to have this in place, I'm going to give out a poster box because my email, after I confronted the situation on WBAI air, in that riotous situation, my email got spammed. So around CERC, so a Circle of Inquiry, Response, and Concern, how we can resolve complex confusion and tricksterism in our own community. Send it to P.O. Box 73, and that's NYC 10113. And in another instance, I'll actually give an example of someone who says they're helping us to model Newark, but there's some untruthfulness and piracy going on there. And I'll listen for, and hopefully I'll get some ideas at my post office box, and that can be some legacy for our youth. And thank you so much. We love you, Utrecht, and miss you yesterday.
It's a mutual admiration society that we have here. I certainly do love this audience so much. Okay, we go on to Marie from Baltimore. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, Utrecht. All right, and I hope you're all right, and I'm glad you're alive and kicking still. I truly am.
Yes,
you don't
I am.
Know. I mean, you make my day and other people's day, too. You don't know how much you do. But I want to comment on your first caller. He mentioned about the economic conditions in this country, which are true and serious. And then I want to say this. You had mentioned earlier this week that you wanted to get more information about the Willie Mandela. And I wonder whether or not you saw on Tuesday or any day this week, an hour and a half on Winnie and Mandela on PBS.org under the title of Independent Lens, N-E-N-S. And it showed an hour and a half on this woman, and maybe you can look her up and give your outlook and opinion about this lady. I know there. I heard about the negatives about her, but when you push somebody to a point of rebellion and anger, it might bring out wrong things. Do you agree with that?
I've been reading about Winnie Mandela for a long time, mm-hmm. and reporting and editing of certainly other people's work on events in South Africa. All I'm saying is this, and we have to be very careful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I talk all the time about environment, the mm-hmm. environment of an issue or speech or even a life. What is the environment?
Yes.
And yes. Very often when we read history, we don't get a sense of what is the actual environment in which things are occurring. They lift things out of the environment, so you get a dimension of it, but it's usually not a full dimension of it. For example, you would think that Winnie Mandela and Nelson Mandela had a basic marriage. No, not at all. This was not a typical marriage. And if, therefore, things are interpreted about their marriage from in terms of an environment in which you apply what you mm-hmm. think a marriage ought to be to what they had as a marriage, you're totally off guard.
Mm-hmm.
You're totally off point.
So
you have to understand the marriage that they had. They had a very unusual marriage. You have two strong-willed people. You have a woman who was not to be toyed with. And in many cases, she took positions and she was out front on things that Nelson kind of backed away from because he was more, let us think about it and let's talk about it. That was not the Winnie Mandela that most people would think they know. So this also brings up the point of, you know, what happens in a war? What happens to people in a war? How does war transform people and the way they think, the way they act, the way they do things? You're talking here about a protracted war that even by the time Nelson and Winnie came together, it was already in full swing and treacherous. The kind of war we have really not seen. We've seen versions of it. But the absolute right of an invader class to do whatever it is they wanted to do. And they got the support of some of the most powerful nations in the world to help them achieve their goals. The United States, Israel, many other countries sided with the Boers. Britain. I mean, we can't even comprehend that. We can't comprehend what life could have been like even before Nelson and Winnie Mandela came on the planet. So a lot of what is reported from a distance, in a sense. We had the benefit of time, and you had people who also, when you think about it, they were like tourists in their own day-to-day experience. You can't deny the wholesale psychological impact. Everybody who was black in South Africa experienced it. This was not normal living. And they were subjected to it in the most extreme ways every single day. That does irreparable harm to your psyche. You have to literally remind yourself every single day you are a victim of war. And they made no jokes about it. They made no excuses about it. They were there to take the land, everything on it, in it, under it, over it, and around it. And they were there and prepared to kill off anybody who stood in their way. They were prepared to subjugate an entire nation on the basis of color alone to be their permanent slaves. And this was ratified. This was endorsed by a lot of people around the world, a lot of nations around the world that would stand tall now and tell us about rights and human rights. But that was not the world that South Africans were living in. They disrupted all these cultural norms and histories. They put people in places that they had not ever been familiar with. You know this idea. So when it's not that there isn't information, but the information that we need is the information that we can get from people who went through every aspect of what I'm talking about. I automatically do not trust a history written from the point of view of conquerors. I don't. And who taught me that? Dr. John Henrik Clark. So I'm looking for a history that puts me in the picture of the mindset of a person or people who underwent extraordinary hardship and psychological pressure and physical threat of death every single day. And I'm looking for a history that is authentic, not that it comes with a predetermined outcome of what story is a proper story to tell. So I'm looking for that kind of a history. I haven't found it yet. And the pieces of the history that have been available that I've read, I appreciate that they tell the story chronologically, and that they can give us some insight into what happened in specific examples. But that is not the history that I really would like to have. The history I would really like to have is a history that tells you all the details and explains precisely what people had to endure for hundreds of years and are expected to be normal. you just don't get that. I don't get that kind of history. Thank you so much, Marie, listen, for calling in today.
Listen, can I say one more thing?
Oh, yes, yes.
Okay. In this film, that I saw last Tuesday, it reminded me of the United States. I did not know that the black people over there in South Africa were fighting among themselves. I just thought that was an American thing in the United States. And so South Africa, to me, looked like United States, and that the people in any country that rise up to fight, they're called all kinds of bad names. And the ones who are terrorists in the country, the government and whoever else, they're called good people. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
And thank you. And you're correct. That's for sure. Patricia from New York, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Eutrice. Good afternoon to the PRN family.
Just a couple of things.
You were talking about Winnie Mandela. I think what generally happens is that the oppressor isolates and then demonizes, so that the narrative that they want to portray and project on an individual is the narrative that they want. Freedom, fighting for your freedom. Freedom is not only is it not free, it's not pretty. It's actually kind of bloody and ugly. And so there is absolutely, you know, I so agree with Jay. There is absolutely nothing that anyone can say to me about Winnie Mandela that would change my opinion of her, how I view her. She is the mother of the South African Revolution. And that's really all I have to say about Winnie. I hadn't planned on talking about it, but since the issue was raised, I said, let me just comment. There's nothing that Winnie did that I have any problems with. Absolutely nothing. I am very clear about that. But also, I don't know if the PRN family is aware. Two callers ago, Julie
yes.
is the aunt of Bree Newsom, the young lady who climbed the flagpole in South Carolina, and took, Bree Newsom is her niece. So yeah, so Bree and Julie come from a distinguished family of advocates and freedom fighters for African liberation. But what I want to talk about today is something interesting that's happening in New York. You know how everybody says politics is local. Well, there's something very, very interesting going on. Andrew Cuomo, who is the governor of New York, for those who are outside of New York, is running for a third term, and there are rumors that he has presidential aspirations in 2020. And all of a sudden, he finds himself in a fight. Now, why would Andrew Cuomo, the son of Mario Cuomo, for those outside of New York, Mario Cuomo was the governor back in the 80s and was very instrumental in the situation that Alton Maddox finds himself in today. Why would Andrew Cuomo be having difficulty in his third run? Well, 4 years ago, he had an opponent by the name of Zephyr Teachout. Nobody had ever heard of Zephyr Teachout. She was a know-nothing law attorney at Fordham University that no one ever heard of. And with a shoestring campaign, Zephyr Teachout got 34% in the New York primary and scared him to death. Well, this time, you've got someone who has a little bit higher profile. Her name is Cynthia Nixon, and for those who are not familiar with Cynthia Nixon, she's an actress, and she was actually in that TV show Sex and the City. But she's been an activist specifically around the area of education for quite some time. I mean, she's not new to people in New York City, maybe to the state, but not the city. And so all of a sudden, Andrew Cuomo, who the black community has not heard of in 8 years, all of a sudden, he's going to the black churches. All of a sudden, he has gone to NYCHA, because there's been a big issue in New York City about the fact that it was very, very cold this winter, and NYCHA housing residents suffered through just the worst lack of heat in the city. And up to today, most of NYCHA residents who are you know, working class poor, have not had heat. All of a sudden, he has told Schneiderman, who is the attorney general. We had a shooting here in New York a few days ago of a mentally ill black man in Brooklyn. All of a sudden, Eric Schneiderman has come out to say that he's going to investigate this shooting of this black man. All of a sudden, everybody understands that the power in New York City is in the hands of black people. And now all of a sudden, everybody's coming out of the woodwork. Every issue we have ever had, all of a sudden, Andrew Cuomo realizes, oh, maybe this will resonate with them. Oh, and what my mission over the next few months is to remind black people that there were big renovations going on here in New York. JFK, huge multi-million dollar contract. LaGuardia Airport, huge multi-million contracts, multi-million dollar contracts. Ask Andrew Cuomo how many black companies got any of those contracts. I mean, I'm not talking about subcontracts where they get pennies. I'm talking about major contracts. The minority women business, he vetoed a bill back in December or beginning of January about a bill that would have made it easier for black women to qualify for grants under the Minority Black Women's Enterprise. Black people need to understand that they don't have to accept second-class citizenship. And the proof of that is in all the flurry of activities that he's now doing in the black community. Now, some of that is a ding at de Blasio, but the point is, for the last 8 years, he has ignored us. But all of a sudden, he doesn't want to be in the same position he was in 4 years ago with Zephyr Teachout, because Zephyr is supporting Cynthia Nixon. So I'm just going to remind black folks you control your destiny. And if you want to continue to put people who put their feet on your neck and strangle you, that's up to you. But then don't turn around and complain.
Amen. That's worth two amens. It's interesting that Eric Schneiderman, the attorney general, is supposed to be conducting an investigation.
he was acting with Eric Garner, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was supposed to conduct that investigation, too.
It never happened.
He didn't find enough evidence. In fact, he probably doubts that Eric Garner actually was killed. You have Crown Heights. That's my favorite territory because it is so distorted. Life in Crown Heights, this little patch of land. And to say now, well, we should do an investigation. I want to know into what? What are you investigating? Toward what end? Enough of the facts are known to begin the process, not of Schneiderman investigating, that's really not his job. We have the city council. The city council, which is the body directly responsible for the performance of the city, New York City Police Department, and the New York City Police Commissioner, I've been saying for a long time, they're the ones who have the wherewithal to fire these people. They've never done it. I don't know what it is they're waiting on, or all I can say. In fact, I have I started to frame a discussion about the idea that people so willingly yield their authority. There's no reason for the New York City Council members to bow out of this. They are the ones to take this on. They are the ones to insist on accountability. They're the ones to initiate firings. That's who is in charge. But they're so timid. They're so fearful because they're so democratic with the big D. They don't want to, in any way rattle the Democrats, because they all are Democrats for the most part. So I'm looking to see how they intend to flex their muscle here. This is directly in their purview. This is directly in their purview. They've never, ever embraced their authority and exercised their full authority over matters like this all these years. They keep deferring to the top Democrat, which is the governor. And we know how with reference to his father, Mario Cuomo, was one of the worst when it came to affirming the rights of citizens in cases where the police are at fault. So we'll see. Thanks a lot, Patricia, for your call. Thank you. Jay from Queens, you're on the air.
Good afternoon. It's been a minute. Can you hear me?
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I just got to say amen, amen, amen for the sister who just spoke, and you chime in on that. But I want to add to the point about the governor. The governor has used his sway and his bully pulpit to, one, align those renegade Democrats who vote basically Republican in the state. And they use that to keep the city council in check, except for those who pretty much, yes, flow with a so-called Democratic big D, but also, you know, are swaying that they will get the support of the governor and whatever he offers in their campaign efforts as they probably age out of the city council and hope to move to some other, either state assembly or something like that. I think that's much for the politics of it. But Cuomo has been a disaster in so many ways. Even his recent effort to step into the housing issue is just total quackery. In that the money that he claims to be releasing, the $500 million, is money that gets from the state gets from the feds anyway and should be released. And I'm not a big de Blasio fan because I think both of them suffer from a degree of corruption, which ordered and should have put them under the jail. But basically, Cuomo, that money was available. And as as de Blasio said, we already have plans to execute these capital expenditures. Yes, let's expedite it. The governor could, you know, remove certain rules or administrative guidelines that would allow those contracts to be expedited faster. However, I'm very leery of Cuomo, who had those big seven contractors upstate who were found under corruption, and which his boy, his colleague has gone and found guilty and is going to jail now. He's someone who he once called his brother. And this is the same Cuomo who disbanded the corruption committee that was supposed to be investigating corruption in the state. But when it came to him, he disbanded all of a sudden. And I am got to say, I'm at this point a big supporter of Cynthia Nixon, because she, in her first debut of what she had to say while she's running, she hit it on the nose. The issue of Cuomo not willing to rein in those Democrats that are voting Republican, Cuomo's own efforts to stymie public education funding to the city that should have been over 20 years. It's been settled. The judgment in court has settled that the money was in unequal and not being distributed to the city schools for Black and Latino children and proper funding of the public schools. And Cuomo has held that money back and has still done so. So this creep, and I don't know, and I don't mean to be too disparaging personally, but something said to me when he speaks, there's something going on with his mind, because he doesn't speak very lucidly. And my opinion is that there's something wrong there on the borderline of Trump a bit. But that said, I'll leave the personal alone, but on policy, this man is a disaster, and I can't wait to see Cynthia beat him. And I have to add to this for those in the progressive or those in the queer community, and I'm not queer, but I will tell you, I couldn't believe this Quinn, the former city councilwoman, would come out and say and mention that Cynthia Nixon happens to be the lesbian. That just showed just how these bootlackers will far they will go. Cynthia's issue, what her personal, you know, get back to which her, you know, her preference in sexual was not even an issue. Another person who also is lesbian brought it up as if to say something disparaging about Cynthia. That was totally inappropriate, but it just shows how these politics were lying. This is the same Quinn who, while in city council, held back the bill to deal with the police issues that would require the police release their records. And that more effort would be done to divulge these investigations about the police stop and frisk issues. Quinn was very much a person who quelched any committee efforts to bring it forth on the floor. So that alignment says she wants to vie for governor, and Cuomo is vying for president, and they're both just, you know, the side of the right. And we need to just see some of this with real clarity. And please don't be misled. For anybody who's concerned about what's going on in housing, The money that Cuomo is releasing was already there and should have been released. Cuomo's playing politics with that, with de Blasio, because he's got angst with de Blasio, but he's wrong. He's so wrong. And there's nothing he's going to do any differently other than expedite contracts that might go to his cronies who was in the real estate and construction industry. So that's my take on it.
Well, I go back to the days of Archie Spigner. Archie Spigner,
yes,
who was
and
the
I knew him well.
Council.
Keep going.
A black man from Queens, as it turns out, your area.
Mm-hmm.
And in the face of all of these issues and problems, the last person who was bringing these things to light was Spigner himself.
Archie
we had
Spigner
the entire contingent of the city council at the precise moment that the New York City Council was majority non-white. They all surrendered their authority and decided to march to entirely different orders. They've abandoned
because,
the advocacy of their communities. Would you agree or disagree?
I totally agree with you. Archie Spigner was not only incompetent I wouldn't call him an imbecile, but just a slickster, a hustler. I knew him well. And I will tell you that he was under Donald Manus's foot and the rest of that Queen apparatus with Koch and all. And that's why they committed suicide. This is the corruption that's been going on for decades. Archie Spigner came out of basically the 60s. He's a bus driver. So these guys didn't have the intellectual capacity to represent the community. They were just basically brought in as the boys who could hang, you know, who you could have, who do their bidding. And Donald Manus ruled with thumb. And he went under the corruption schemes. Okay. So this stuff goes on and on, and we need not be hoodwinked. We just got to follow the bouncing ball and remember the history. This stuff runs deep, and Cuomo's a part of that legacy. And I just say, I take de Blasio over Cuomo any day. And I'm not a big fan of de Blasio, but I will tell you.
To have to weigh a de Blasio against Cuomo, that's a rough choice.
Well, at least someone's trying to go left and maybe faking it a bit, but more or less Cuomo, he's dirty. Dirty to the nth degree.
Well, you have had the last say, Jay, today from Queens. Thank you so much, and thank you all for your very meaningful contributions to our discussions here on Free Your Mind Friday. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Alternative Visions with Dr. Jack Rasmus. And we'll see you next Monday. Have a pleasant and joyful weekend.
I know we can make it.
I know that we can.
I know Don Way.